Please enjoy this previously recorded segment.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Connie Alvarez, your host from Verrill, and today our guest is Robert Baldacci with Baldacci Consulting Group and an associate broker at F.O. Bailey Real Estate. Hi, Robert. How are you today?
I'm fine, Connie, and how are you?
I am well. So I am really excited for our conversation today. We're going to be talking about learning from your failures. And you and I have had a discussion offline already, just talking about your history and this topic kind of more generally. So I'm really excited for you to have the opportunity to share some of your experiences with our listeners, especially how it relates to human resources issues and general operational concerns. So let's start a little bit with your background. Tell me a little bit more about who Robert Baldacci is. And for most Mainers, I'm sure the Baldacci name rings a bell, but why don't you give some people some background?
Sure, be happy to, Connie. I am the oldest of eight children. My parents, Robert and Rosemary Baldacci, started a restaurant business in Bangor. My dad, along with his mother and his brother, started a restaurant called The Baltimore, which was quite well known, one of the few Italian-American restaurants in Maine, known as Il Ristorante Sotto il Ponte, the restaurant under the bridge, and very successful. We all grew up in that business, and through that and my dad's connections, not only with the business, but in politics. He was one of the few Democrats at the time, working with Ed Muskie and Frank Coffin to help build what is now known as the Democratic Party in Maine. And we had the opportunity to meet many, many people through the restaurant and through my dad that have had a profound impact on our lives. I remember well in 1960 when my dad brought then-Senator John F. Kennedy to Bangor, campaigning for the presidential nomination. And we all had a chance to meet with Jack Kennedy, and my dad went on to become a national delegate for Jack at the convention in Los Angeles.
It's interesting kind of to hear about these aspects of growing up in the restaurant industry, and especially right now in the midst of COVID, when we talk about opening up restaurants. And the fact that restaurants aren't just a place where people go and eat, but for a lot of people, it's a community hub. It's a place in which they will go to share time with other members of the community, to catch up on news, and generally serves as a meeting space. So it's interesting to hear some of these stories now at a time in which one's ability to kind of participate in activities that you're discussing is much more significantly limited.
That's so true, Tani. And the restaurant business is a place where people congregate and socialize over a meal or drinks. And it's frustrating and sad to see today that with the virus that we're all trying to deal with and act responsibly, that part of our lives is really missing. And one of the roles that I have, my wife and I are involved in with a fast food franchise called Firehouse Subs. We are the area reps for the New England area, and we oversee the operations for the Firehouse Subs that are doing business here in New England, and working with new franchisees and helping them set up their restaurants and do training and things like that. So it's been quite a process for us and for our franchisees to deal with the restrictions, the dine-in restrictions that are so prevalent throughout the United States right now, and even more so in New England. So that's been quite a challenge.
Absolutely. Definitely something that I think all of our listeners are currently struggling with. But I think it's really interesting, and I want to talk more about your franchisee-franchisor relationships as well, and kind of more generally your restaurant experience. But I'd love for you to explain to listeners how do we get to where we are today, especially kind of with all those connections politically. Why not go into politics and why get into the consulting world and real estate?
Well, thank you. It's been a long and winding road, to say the least, and to establish a livelihood and opportunities here in Maine, you have to be creative and open to new challenges. But I, as the oldest of eight kids, we grew up in the restaurant business. First it was the Baltimore, then Mama Baldacci's. We all, with one exception, went to the University of Maine, and several of my siblings went on to law school and are lawyers. My brother Peter and Joe and sister Lisa are all attorneys. My brother John and I did graduate from Maine, and I went on to get a master's degree, and I've also been very, very involved and committed to the university. I've served as an adjunct professor in the Graduate School of Public Administration. I served on the Board of Visitors for the University of Maine, and I'm a huge advocate for the critical role that the university plays in our state. It's so important, to say the least. And so from there, I worked in the public sector. I started out my career with an organization called Eastern Maine Development Corporation. It was called a district at the time, and it was a federally funded, county funded economic development group, still going strong, in based out of Bangor. And we served a 6-county area in Eastern Maine, and I worked with businesses and communities throughout the 6 counties and helping them with many different economic development initiatives. And it was a terrific experience. And from that opportunity, I went on to become the assistant city manager and economic development director in Old Town, Maine. I really wanted the opportunity to work hands-on with the community, directly with the community. And we were very, very successful in a number of different initiatives in Old Town, establishing an industrial park, doing downtown redevelopment, doing community development. And I had the opportunity to work with George Campbell, who was the city manager. And George has gone on to be commissioner of transportation and mayor of Portland and many other jobs, too many to name here. But great opportunity to work with him in that capacity. And then I went into the private sector, working for a Bangor-based real estate development company. We were involved in housing and commercial development. And I decided in the early 1980s to set up my own company in real estate development. And I like to think I was pretty successful in building a number of housing projects, both affordable and market rate, as well as commercial developments throughout Eastern Maine, primarily. I also worked in doing timeshare developments on Mount Desert Island, and we built a small timeshare project in Ireland. So that has been great, and I still own and manage many of those properties.
For our listeners who are just joining us, We are talking today to Robert Baldacci, who is with Baldacci Consulting Group and an associate broker at F.O. Bailey Real Estate. And our topic today is learning from your failures. And we've spent the first portion of our time together talking about Robert's background and history. And I think we're about to get into kind of Baldacci Consulting Group. So, Robert, tell us a little bit about how you came about or decided to start Robert Baldacci Consulting Group.
Yeah, be happy to. Just prior to Baldacci Consulting Group, I did serve as the as a co-managing partner at Pierce Atwood's Consulting Group. And I worked with the law firm and worked with a number of their clients on a wide variety of economic and community development projects. And then I became vice president for development with Ocean Properties, which is a major hotel company, originally the Walsh families from Bangor, Maine, and we're very close friends of our family, and I worked in that capacity. And then decided to focus with my own company, with the consulting group, and I've worked with many startup companies, helping them with business plans and helping them with some fundraising. And it's been a great experience and one I'd be happy to talk about in greater detail.
Earlier, you mentioned kind of the work that you're doing right now in the midst of COVID as a franchisee owner for Firehouse Subs. How did you find yourself there and as a franchisee of that organization?
Well, it started almost 10 years ago when my cousins in Jacksonville, Florida, had a very close relationship with the owners, the founders of Firehouse Subs, Robin and Chris Sorensen. And we decided to explore the opportunity because at that point, the New England market was available. And my wife and I went down to Jacksonville and met with the whole team at Firehouse, really liked what we saw. And what impressed us probably more than anything else was the their Public Safety Foundation, where they give back so much to the community for life-saving equipment for firefighters and first responders. And they raise millions and millions of dollars each year to do that. And we thought that, aside from the fact they make phenomenal sandwiches, we thought that here's a company that gives back and has a great product. So we pursued it and obtained the development rights for New England and began to work with franchisees in building out the market. And it's been a great experience, and we're continuing to do that today.
Now, at this point in time, I believe in the past, did you also own one of the franchises, or at this time, are you just working with the franchisees?
No, we owned a restaurant in Danvers, Massachusetts, and when we talk about failures, I'd be happy to talk about that, but we also are partners now with Michael Komen, who co-owns the Biddeford Firehouse Subs, which we are partners with him in that operation, and that is the training restaurant for franchisees who are interested in buying a franchise for Firehouse Subs in New England. But the Danvers experience was one that taught us a few lessons, to say the least.
I love the way that you have framed being taught some lessons. Getting ready to take a break, but before we take that break, I think some of our listeners would probably be interested to hear, before we get into some of those failures, what would you find to be one of the major differences between being a solo restaurant owner or starting something up on your own versus being involved in a franchisee-franchisor relationship?
That's a great question, Tony. And I think to have a brand and a franchise organization backing you up, I think reduces your risk in the restaurant business significantly. Not to say that it's a guarantee for success, because at the end of the day, it all comes back on the owner-operator and how committed you are to the business to make it work. But I work with it every day to have the background information, the data, the support from a national organization In the case of Firehouse Subs, we have over 1,000 restaurants in the United States and in Canada, and to have that backing you up is a huge plus. The problem is you don't, you know, it's very hard to tailor your menu to a local market, because the menu that we have in Bangor, Maine is the same menu that they have in Jacksonville, Florida, or in Los Angeles, California. So you're bound with those restrictions. You're dealing with a brand that you have to maintain and adhere to those standards. Whereas an independent, you can do your own thing, and you have the flexibility to create your own concept. But the failure rate of restaurants is so high. It's a tough business. That's the one thing I can say, Tony, is it's a very, very challenging business. The margins are very thin, and everybody thinks they can come in, you know, come into a restaurant opportunity and make it work. And my dad used to say, the problem is what a lot of people don't realize. It's exciting. It's fun. You're dealing with a lot of people, but you have to do that day in and day out and be consistent. And it's tough, and not a lot of people are cut out for it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think on that note, this would be a good time for us to take a quick break. And I think it's funny, but considering our topic today, normally I wouldn't end on a failure, but since our topic today is learning from your failures, we're going to take a quick break. And when we return, I want to get into how we learn from those failures and the specific things that you learned. So we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsandme.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobsandme to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsandme.com. That's jobsandme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
I'm Chris Riccobono, founder of Untuckit. We started Untuckit because we couldn't find shirts that look good untucked. That's why we created the perfect untucked shirt so guys can look sharp and feel casual. Untuckit shirts fall at just the right length. We have 50 fit combinations, so tall, short, slim, and bigger guys of all ages can look great in Untuckit shirts. Try the original Untuckit shirt at one of our 55 Untuckit stores or at Untuckit.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts. StopWrecks.org.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez from Verrill, your host, and I'm talking with Robert Baldacci with Baldacci Consulting Group and an associate broker at F.O. Bailey Real Estate. Today, our topic is learning from your failures, and we spent a good portion of the first segment talking a lot about Robert's past experiences and how he got to the point in which he's at now. Right before the break, we were talking about his experiences as a franchisee with Firehouse Subs. and some of the differences between being a franchisee versus owning your own restaurant and just the restaurant industry in general. And one of the things that I think it makes sense to kind of jump right in on, Robert, is you mentioned earlier that you've had some failures with Firehouse Sub. Can you expand on that for our listeners a little bit more so that they can understand what you mean by that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. When we first got involved with Firehouse Subs, we hired an individual to run operations for us because I was not at the point, neither was my wife, where we could devote full time to it. So we hired an individual to go down to Danvers, and that was the location where we were asked to open up a restaurant. So in effect, we managed it from afar, which is almost an hour and a half away, Danvers to Portland. And dealing with a location at the time was not a prime location, and we've learned a lot about what represents a good location versus a second or third rate location and how that might impact your bottom line and your sales. So in effect, at the time, Tani, we were operating with an individual who was running the business for us and in a location that was an hour and a half away. And at that point in time, that individual did not make the commitment to move down to the area. So we relied on a general manager that we hired to be there every day. But the owner's not in the store. You're going to have some problems. And if the owner is not tied into the community and making the effort to be part of the community, you're not going to succeed. So it took us a few years and a lot of money that we invested. My wife and I finally made the decision that we needed to be involved in that business full time. So we rented an apartment in the area, and we went through the whole training program that the Firehouse has, which was very exhausting and took a lot of time to go through that process to learn the business, including a 6-week training program and 2 weeks down in Jacksonville. A lot of effort, and but we knew that either we were going to do that or we were going to close the doors. So we made that commitment. We did turn the business around to at least a point where it was breaking even, and we began to have some issues with some of our employees, and we've got kids here and they're going to school in the area, and it was very difficult for us to try to deal with both. So we made the decision to close that restaurant, which was a very tough decision, but we knew it was the right decision for our family and for our business. And we were able to work with Firehouse to move our training restaurant back into Maine. And we partnered with the franchisee in Biddeford. And that's where we work to train new franchisees, introduce new technology, all of those things that are important to supporting our Firehouse franchisees. So it's worked out great. We've got a great partner. And although we sustained a loss in Massachusetts, we learned a lot from that. We learned a lot in terms of dealing with employees, the fact that you need to be involved day-to-day with your business, and how important a good location is, because the restaurant business is so competitive, and you need to have every advantage that's on the table to support what you're trying to do. So that was an experience that we went through and came out much better in the long run.
One of the things that you mentioned that struck me and is something that I think will stick with me for a while is the comment that you have to be part of the community. Yeah. And I think that while that is probably even more important in the restaurant industry, I think it's something that oftentimes may be overlooked by businesses when they are considering starting up, or even, you know, once they are established but maybe are looking to transition or to grow in additional ways is how important the support of the community that they work and live in is to the success of the organization. If you had started kind of your first Firehouse sub either in Portland, Maine or in Bangor, Maine, do you see this story having ended differently?
Absolutely, it would have ended differently. There's no question because this is our home. This is where we know people. And I think the proof is in the pudding. We just opened up a Firehouse Subs restaurant in Bangor, Maine. And I've got a lot of connections in Bangor, as you know. And we have a phenomenal husband and wife franchisee, Derek and Jess Nichols. And Derek is originally from the greater Bangor area. Worked in Firehouse, he and his wife, for 15 years across the country. They opened up our Waterville, Maine restaurant. And Derek is one of these guys who really makes the effort to go outside of the four walls of that restaurant and work with the community and sell Firehouse subs. And Waterville became one of the top selling restaurants, grossing restaurants in New England, believe it or not. And it was a location that was rejected a number of times by corporate. And that's a great example of how a restaurant owner-operator can make a difference in a location that is not a large metro area, but was extremely profitable and did well. And Derek is doing the same thing in Bangor, one of the top-selling restaurants in the entire system. And he makes the effort, and I made the effort working with him to make sure that the community was knew about Firehouse Subs and knew how we were there to help the community as well. It's not a one-way street. So through our Public Safety Foundation, where we work with the local Bangor Fire Department to get grants for life-saving equipment, we've done the same thing here in the greater Portland area, working with our franchisee and partner in Biddeford. So we've given almost $400,000 in public safety grants to local fire departments and EMTs here in Maine. Very proud of that.
I think that the community, kind of that aspect of what Firehouse Subs does is even more helpful in helping it to create that community feeling and connecting with individuals locally who have those needs. In my mind, something that goes hand in hand with community, however, is the concept or idea of reputation. How would you describe how in the past and currently you're finding that the community and both your reputation and the reputation of your employees is affecting your success? Or in the same vein, if there's been failures along the way as it relates to possible reputational issues of staff members?
That's a great question. One of the lessons that my brothers and sisters have learned from my parents is your reputation is everything. And you know, when we learned from the example set by our parents, my dad always would press upon us to give back to the community. And I remember when my brother John was in the state Senate and ultimately governor, dad didn't live to see him serve in Congress or the governorship. But he always used to say to John, "What have you done for the people today? What have you done to help?" And that was one of the things that we had, I think, a memento that we put on. We had on John's desk when he became governor is, "What have you done for the people today?" And that was always something that stuck in our heads, no matter whether we were involved in public service or business or whatever. What are you doing to make things better? How are you treating people? So that has been a very important part of our character and how we were raised and how we try to live our lives. And the eight of us were all different. We lost my young brother Paul, who was running our restaurant, Mama Baldacci's in Bangor. But every day we would try to make the best effort we can to represent our family, represent our kids and our heritage to the best that we can. And that translates into business as well. And that's how I've tried to conduct myself. Yeah, I've made mistakes along the way, getting involved with people who I wish I never did. And you learn your lessons. Sometimes you can get captivated by a personality and find out that they're really not who they say they are. But that's a learning experience, and you learn every day who you can trust and who you can't trust.
As a result of that experience, Robert, have you picked up or have you noticed any, I don't want to say personality traits, but more characteristics that oftentimes lead you to second guess, you know, the trustworthiness of an individual? I mean, I feel as though oftentimes the only way to begin that second guessing project or process is to be burned, is to have that trust broken. But have you found any aspects of either how people present opportunities to you or how they market themselves that you have found more often than not they're too good to be true, kind of salesmanship is in fact too good to be true?
Yep, absolutely. And I won't get into any personalities, but yes, I've come across people that do exactly that. And at first, you know, you can get captivated by the bravado and the fact that, you know, we're gonna make a fortune here. And this, if it's too easy, then it's too easy. And nothing worth achieving is easy. And it takes a lot of hard work. But yes, I've been involved with different individuals who will promise the world and not deliver. And oftentimes costing money, my time, and the best thing in the world is just to move away and not be involved with people like that and try to learn your lessons. But thankfully, those experiences have been few and far between. But without getting into any specific businesses or individuals, let me just leave it at that. Let's just say I've learned my lesson. But every day, you know, you're learning new lessons, so it never ends.
Understood. And I mean, considering our topic today is learning from your failures, I think we're going to take a break and end that segment on another low note, I guess. The best way to describe it. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello. I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsinme.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their QuickPost product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsNME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsNME.com. That's JobsNME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
The best paints for the job site are at the Home Depot, specifically new Glidden Diamond Paint and Primer. It starts at only $23.98 a gallon. It's specially formulated to spray easier and cover walls faster. A lot faster. So you're done and on to the next job faster. Better paint means better jobs. New Glidden Diamond Paint and Primer starting at just $23.98 a gallon. You'll only find it in one place. The Home Depot. More saving. More doing. U.S. only.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plotto and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then,
hey!
The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez from Verrill, your host, and I'm talking with Robert Baldacci with Baldacci Consulting Group and an associate broker at F.O. Bailey Real Estate. Today we're discussing the topic of learning from your failures. Prior to the break, we spent a lot of time talking about the importance of community and reputation and the effect that both of those have, both on success and on failure. And before we went out on break, one of the things that Robert said that really captivated me is that nothing worth achieving is going to be easy. And it's interesting because as I sit here and we're recording this episode, and we're doing this recording, unfortunately, virtually because of the COVID-19 pandemic, I have on my screen this note to myself, and it says, it's not easy, but nothing of value is. And I try to remind myself of that when I fail. But I think one of the times in which we see failure a lot is in startups. Robert, my understanding is that you have a lot of experience with startups and specifically were a key player and played a big role in the Pitch Me project that occurred a few years ago. Can you describe your experience both with startups and specifically with Pitch Me?
Yeah, I'd be happy to, Tani. Working with new businesses has been a real passion of mine for many years, and it started with my connection at the University of Maine, working with some of the faculty and students at the university on technology transfer of some of the amazing research and development that has been going on and continues to go on at the University of Maine to turn those ideas into businesses. So I had a very close connection with people like Habib Dagar and George Markowski and others who are doing incredible work at the university. And my interest has always been, okay, that's great. Let's take these ideas and let's put together a business opportunity. So as a result of that, I counseled and worked with a number of startups, and I thought, wouldn't it be a good idea to put a show together? And we did with the local Maine Media Television Network in Portland, to showcase some new entrepreneurs and have it not only be a great opportunity for the entrepreneur, but also for the viewer audience to learn a little bit of what's involved in a business. So I put together a panel of, I like to think, pretty distinguished people. We had F. Lee Bailey, who had been involved in a number of businesses, who's Lee's a very good friend of mine and just incredibly brilliant when it comes to business. Sandy Spaulding, who is a former chair of the Maine Technology Institute, very good friend. My wife, Elizabeth, who has a long background in sales and marketing, and other people that we would bring on. And we would invite entrepreneurs to come and pitch their product or ideas. And the back and forth was fascinating. And people can see those programs, I believe, on YouTube or online through the Community Television Network in Portland. And it was a great experience. I've also taken that and was involved in bridging a memorandum of understanding between the University of Maine and universities in Northern Ireland, Ulster and Queen's, where they were involved in very fascinating research and development initiatives. How I got involved with Northern Ireland was my cousin is George Mitchell, and George, as you know, was instrumental in brokering the Good Friday Agreement that brought peace to Northern Ireland, and he was very helpful in setting up opportunities where I could connect with the universities over there, and I led a couple of trade missions with the University of Maine to Northern Ireland for faculty exchanges and joint economic and community development initiatives as well, which was a lot of fun and very fascinating. I've also been part of a group called the Maine Angels. My wife and I both were, there's about 50 or 60 investors, entrepreneurs who meet monthly and meet with prospective entrepreneurs who are pitching their product. And many times we would invest, but the chances are so slim with these, Tani, that if you can hit on one of them, you could do very, very well. But these are early stage startups that have tremendous amount of risk, and you kind of stand back and okay, why did this one succeed, and why did this one fail? And more often than not, most do not make it. Even though they've got a great idea and a great product, for whatever reason, it just doesn't happen. You know, and through that process, again, you learn so much about what it takes to have a successful business. And it's more than just a good idea. It's having the right people and having the right business plan in the right direction in terms of where you want to go. And oftentimes, one or more of those ingredients are lacking. Or the market isn't there to the extent they thought it was, things like that. So,
we've talked about community and we've talked about reputation, but let's focus a little bit more on that startup community. If you were to pick one element of the things that you just mentioned as being most often something you see that's leading to failure, what would that element be? I know that there's a lot to choose from, but is there one that you consistently see happening over and over again, whether it's going into business with friends or family, whether it's not having a good sense of the market, whether it's timing or lack of market research? Is there one that you see more often than the others?
All those items that you mentioned have I've seen and witnessed up close and personal. But I was involved as an investor and a partner in a headset manufacturing company that was established in Maine. Great people involved, great idea. But as it turned out, the burn rate or the monthly overhead costs associated with that business was so significant for a startup because we had engineers and we had a pretty hefty payroll to meet every month. That it was very difficult to keep raising money to satisfy the payroll demands and the overhead demands associated with that business. And after a while, investors would just get burned out. Enough is enough. Even though the company was close to breaking even, their timeline in terms of what their pro forma said was way off. The product had some problems as it went into the market that nobody anticipated, and that cost money. So time and money and the overhead associated with it were very difficult challenges to deal with. And as a result, the company did not succeed. So, but there are other examples where. Whether it's a gelato company that had the right management and the right cost structure and the right market and right opportunity and have done well. But, you know, you just never know. It's a risk, it's a gamble, and you're gambling on people. You're gambling on their reputations, their previous experience. Do they know this market? How detailed is the business plan? Do they have enough money budgeted to do what they say they need to do? And oftentimes, that's one of the big problems. They just don't have enough money. So it's just every opportunity, every business is different. And to pick a winner or loser is almost impossible sometimes, because you just never know.
And on that note, we're going to take a quick break. You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBRadio.com, and we'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employee relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their QuickPost product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
I'm Chris Riccobono, founder of UNTUCKit. We started UNTUCKit because we couldn't find shirts that look good untucked. That's why we created the perfect untucked shirt so guys can look sharp and feel casual. UNTUCKit shirts fall at just the right length. We have 50 fit combinations, so tall, short, slim, and bigger guys of all ages can look great in UNTUCKit shirts. Try the original UNTUCKit shirt at one of our 55 UNTUCKit stores or at UNTUCKit.com.
Use the promo code FALL for 20% off your first purchase.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tani Alvarez from Verrill, your host, and today we've been talking with Robert Baldacci, and we've been discussing a lot about his experiences, both of success and failure. Whether or not that is pursuant to his role, kind of helping or assisting startups at early stages, whether it's working with franchisees, or whether it's with his own businesses and the risks that he has taken throughout his business career and what he's learned from those risks. Robert, someone who has as much experience in the business world as you do and in such a variety of industries, I would love to hear from you as to what guidance you would provide to businesses as they work and attempt to operate through our current pandemic.
Thank you, Tani. And first of all, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. And the pandemic has certainly created a huge obstacle and a huge challenge for businesses all across the world, really. But here in Maine and England, where I operate with primarily with firehouse subs businesses, we have done pretty well. And I think one reason is, thankfully, and it's, again, part of being with a brand and a franchise that is somewhat proactive, our executive team in Jacksonville, prior to the pandemic, saw the trend in dine-in, where that used to be a predominant part of our business. 60 to 70% of our business was dine-in, whereas 30 to 40% was takeout. That's now turned on its head. And so prior to the pandemic, we were able to introduce Rapid Rescue to Go, where you can order online and prepay for your food and come in and pick up your order quickly. We also have adopted third-party delivery using using such vehicles as DoorDash and Uber Eats to deliver our product directly to the consumer. And our takeout, just calling in and coming into the restaurant and picking up their food. So well before the pandemic, we had the technology, back-of-the-house support systems, to take advantage of the new trends that we were seeing in the restaurant business. So as the pandemic hit, dining rooms were shut down. We were still allowed to operate with curbside pickup and takeout, but no dine-in. And yeah, initially we did see some significant cutbacks in our sales, and employees were being laid off because the business wasn't there. But over the last several weeks, since we've been going through this pandemic, our restaurants are doing very well. Having the Small Business Administration PPP program has also been a big factor in helping these businesses go through some tough times, working with their landlords. And I would encourage any business that is suffering from the pandemic right now to make sure that you've applied for your PPP funding. I do know that there are some of the local banks that still have money available, and please take advantage of that. And also, do not sit on your thumbs. Be proactive and look at ways your product can reach the consumer without having them come into the restaurant, whether it's curbside, online, web ordering, and things like that. And finally, work with your landlords. Work with your landlords to renegotiate your rents or ask for rent deferrals. And we've been working with our franchisees to make sure that they are at least making the effort with their landlords during these tough times to ask for rent concessions. And better yet, looking to the future, look at ways to renegotiate the rent on more favorable terms. So those are the things that we have that we've been dealing with, and I think quite successfully.
Robert, I think all of that is such amazing advice, and I appreciate your time today and sharing all of your experiences with our listeners. So thank you so much.
Connie, thank you. I've enjoyed it.
You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Stay tuned for the HR Tip of the Week.
And now, your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by Verrill.
Hi, I'm Richard Moen from Verrill. This week's Tip of the Week is: you need to plan to start to recall your employees now that states and the federal government have proposed reopening timeframes. You need to focus on such items as prudent good hygiene, which means, do you have cleansing materials? Is the landlord, if you don't own your building, properly cleaned the space, or have you properly cleaned the space? Can you arrange for social distancing? Does that involve a change in worker layout? Will you take temperatures or seek direct statements of employee health, perhaps a certification? Will you ask for a doctor's note? Will you do testing of employees? Testing and taking temperatures and requesting health certificates are all now permitted by the EEOC. The simple fact is you're going to need to train somebody to monitor these health issues and make sure you're addressing them appropriately.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.